Hi, my name is Latasha. I am a proud Korean and African-American woman. I was born in Kansas. My dad was in the military, so I am a military brat. I currently live in sunny Orlando, Florida, with my husband and four beautiful girls. And this is The Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. Welcome, Latasha Ferguson. How are you doing today?
I am well, Josh. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on. I remember, man, it's probably a year and a half ago, we were on Zoom and we even met in Florida talking about our backgrounds and who we are. And you have such an interesting story. And we also work together at PAX, which has been an incredible honor. I would love to start off. Tell me about your cultural background, your story.
Okay, so I am a proud, I like to call it mixed chick. So my mother is Korean, my dad is African American. And so I come from two very strong, rich cultural backgrounds. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I figured out like, wow, this is such a blessing, because I've had some challenges and complications along the way coming from two backgrounds and trying to figure out where do I fit, where do I belong. Wasn't until I got older that I realized like what a privilege it has been, and it even is, to come from such strong, deep rooted backgrounds.
What was it like growing up biracial, and where did you grow up specifically?
Okay. So my dad was in the military, in the army. So I was born in Kansas. No, I have not been back, because I usually get that question. When do you go? I don't. So I have no family there, but was born in an army base there. Sister was born in Korea. And so from there, that started kind of like our traveling around, moved to Texas, then did a long tour in Germany, probably about 7-8 years. My dad loved it so much, he kept re-upping and stayed longer and longer. And he ended up retiring actually in there, and then working a contracting job. And so I spent most of when folks ask like, where are you from? It's such a complex question for me, because my dad, you know, my mom was born in Seoul, Korea, raised there. My dad, born and raised in Inverness, Florida, a very small town on the West Coast, Florida, and kind of central West Florida. And so, I spent a lot of my formative years, just, you know, elementary, primary years and middle school in Germany. And so there I was, bicultural child living in Europe,
yeah,
learning German, of which I know enough right now, but I do see it as like a second home for me, and lived on an army base where it was kind of utopian in nature. And I know you and I've talked about that a little bit, where, you know, almost all of my friends, neighbors were of a mixed background.
Wow.
And my mom had a very large Korean community, very large African-American community, and then a lot of just mixed, you know, German and Korean, Puerto Rican and Taiwanese. I mean, it was just, I grew up seeing a lot of the cultures more than what I saw when I moved back to the United States, and those cultures mingling and mixing. And it was just normal. Yeah. It was absolutely normal for it to be in that type of culture on the army base. And so that's what I grew up with until I moved to the United States, back to my dad's hometown. And then reality harshly slapped me in the face of how it's really not like that stateside, and specifically in that town. And so that's where it really started getting me reeling and rocking about who am I and where do I fit, was during those high school years moving back to the United States.
So you came back to the States from traveling all over the world, but Germany primarily, when you were in high school, and you weren't on a base in high school. Is that the case, that was the transition from, you know, like you talked about the utopian? And I've heard this from a few people who grew up in the military, because it's like everybody of the same class and people of similar rank, their families live together, and you're in a lot of ways protected on this base. Of course, it's the military.
Yes.
But then coming back to the States, being off the base, what was that like for you? Give us either a story, situation, or the things that you were thinking that was jarring for you. What about it was jarring?
Gosh, I think probably the most, you know how they say when you think of an event and it could be good or it could be painful, and you can remember what you're wearing, you can remember what other people looked like, you can remember the time of the day, even smells you can remember. And probably the one that stood out the most, I mean, there's a few different ones, but when we were enrolled into school, and I think now it's probably actually my last year in middle school. And I don't know anyone who was like, I want to go back to middle school. Like nobody ever says that. Right. Nope. So middle school is painful.
Not me.
not anybody that I know was like, I love middle school. So middle school is awkward and weird and painful anyways. Yeah. Right. So then you move from where I was and you come here. And here at the time was a town that was literally black and white, right? So black folks were known to live across the tracks. And so they lived in a certain portion of the town. White folks lived in a certain portion of the town. There were not many, any other races or ethnicities. It was very odd. And then my mom coming, especially, I know she wasn't the only Asian, but that's what it felt like at the time. And we were definitely probably the only Korean and, black girls in that town. So I remember getting my lunch from the cafeteria. And standing, and I can see myself doing it right now, standing and looking inside the cafeteria and going, whoa, it's literally black and white. And at that time, I remember thinking like, well, I don't really want to sit here or there. Like, where is the place where I can sit with both? And that did not exist. And then conversations started to be around, you know, I had befriended my friend John, and he's white. And so I remember trying to hang with him, and then other, you know, some of the black students saying like, well, why are you trying to be white? Like, you need to hang with us. And then it was this back and forth of why can't you hang with both? And I mean, it was really, that was jarring. It was. And then the questions of like, is that your hair? Why do you speak like that? Why do you look like that? And where are you from? Always the where are you from, but really trying to ask about my ethnicity and cultural background, not literally the town or the city. And so that was just trying to figure out who I was as a teenager. On top of that, now being dropped into a small town where I was like, I felt like an alien. My sister and I both felt like aliens.
Wow. I love that you brought up the issue of people asking where you're from. Oftentimes, people who don't know how to have a conversation about culture ask the question where you're from, but oftentimes that immediately others somebody, as opposed to saying, talk about your cultural identity, or I'd love to hear about that. It's where you're from, which the assumption is it's not here. You can't be from here. You can't be American, which is a really dangerous way to be asking questions, right?
Oh my gosh, it is. It's so, and I tell people I've kind of learned some coping mechanisms, and my friends out there who are listening are from bicultural, biracial backgrounds, probably have learned those as well, some coping mechanisms. So when you go into spaces, I already know to lead in with my cultural background before somebody asks, where are you from? Because about 99% of the time, they're not really wanting to know, Orlando, Florida. They're like, no. Then I get the follow-up. No, where are you from?
Yeah.
Then I say, do you mean my cultural background? Do you mean like, and then they start the guessing game. Philippines, are you Hawaiian? Are you Taiwanese? Are you, and so then they, get into all the questions. And yes, it does other you. And it definitely, of course, I can process it better now. But when I was younger, it was really, I found there was a season of my life, I was really on the defense, right? Uh-huh. And I didn't even know how to answer it without being offended. And so I've had to do a lot of processing of most folks don't mean to offend when they come in with that question, right? They don't mean to be like, let me dagger her with this question to make her feel like an other. So I've tried to look at it as more so of, let me try to educate this person on how to say, on how to ask, yeah, and how to properly go. But in with those types of questions, ask for what you really want to know. But it does, I will say, in all honesty, gets a little exhausting at times, trying to explain, you know, that, you know, we are in America, you know, have been known as the melting pot. And I've heard a lot of people pride themselves on, like, we invite and we, but we also know there's another side of that. That sounds good, but there's like you said, the other, there's the, what Americans should look like, sound like, appear like, and even so in our churches, which I know we'll dive into that in a minute. And so, yeah, it no longer offends me, but it was a huge pain point at one time, just trying to navigate that question.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing vulnerably on that. What parts of your cultural identity are really important to you? You talk about going through a journey and you are where you are now, but thinking about your culture, being biracial, the African-American, Korean heritage, and then the international flavor too. We're talking about traveling a lot and having that. What are the aspects of your cultural identity that are prized by you?
Oh gosh, geez. So as you were talking, one of the first things that comes to mind, I think there is a surface appreciation. I'm a foodie. Okay. So I'll start there. I'm a foodie. And so there's a surface appreciation, I believe, for food and not even a deep appreciation for culturally different types of food. When we really think about, especially in America, we like to Americanize a lot, all the things.
Everything.
Oh gosh, we can go on, have a whole episode about that, Josh. But, and so, we like to American. I put our little American spin on everything. You know, it has been, I remember telling a friend when I would go to a barbecue, and it would be my friends who would come from all of their backgrounds. There would be a pig roasting underground. Right. And so my friends who were from Hawaii and had that background and loved, had that Pacific flavor with their food of roasting pigs and things that would be going on. Then we would have, you know, the Southern style rib and chicken and all that. And then we'd have kimchi and rice.
Wow.
And we'd have seaweed, potato salad. We would have, I mean, it would be like a whole international affair going on at a barbecue. And it was not uncommon for me to have all of those things kind of sitting by each other on a plate. And I learned how to enjoy all of them all together. And so for me, when I think about, you know, rich culture, I think about food and how deep food goes and the roots. And even now as an adult, learning more about food and where it's come from, African-American culture and the coast of Africa and how certain things were brought here. And then even watching specials about Korea and the different aspects of just even kimchi and what it means and deeply to folks. So, you know, I really prize food and learning about other people's stories through food and how food has impacted me. And even when you talk about that international flair, I feel like it's even when some folks say, like, how, you know, how do we create a bridge and how do we, you know, bring folks together? I think food is one of those things that you can bring folks together and have, you know, teach them about appreciating different cultures and why things are the way that they are. And even as a parent, you know, there's a saying, you know, don't yuck somebody's yum.
So good.
And figuring out, you know, why a person may eat this here and we don't eat it here, but let's try that. And so that piece, and I think also both African-American culture as well as Asian culture, there is a deep reverence of the elderly and also family and togetherness. And so it's, you know, it's, I watched my mom when we were younger, right after we went to church, we had a meal with everyone. That was wasn't once a month. It was everybody brought their special dish and we had a meal all together after church and we ate everybody's specialty kimchi or whatever it was. And we ate it all together. And that community was so big and important. in the Asian culture as well as African-American culture. And so that's a big piece. I love hospitality. I love hosting. I love having people around a table of food and also sharing and coming together. Both of those are two pieces that are super rich for me and mean a lot.
I've never heard that phrase before. You're going to have to help me because I'm going to mess it up. Don't yuck somebody's yum. Was that it?
Yum. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me of kind of the sister phrase that's really important for people to adopt, which is weird is not wrong necessarily, yeah. Right? Just because it's weird to you or different, yes. Don't assign a moral value to that right away. Yeah. And we tend to do that. Just right away, we judge it and we think it's wrong because it's a different way of expressing or eating or showing up to event or any of those things that we, the smells of the food it's been so hard as a majority culture Christian to rewire. And my wife would say, well, you're not even rewired yet, but like to rewire my framework to say, just because it's different than what I know or understand, or even the interpretation of the text coming from a white perspective, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm right or it is right. Just because I come across something strange or weird doesn't mean it's wrong. So I love that. I love that phrase. Let's transition to Jesus. A question I'm kind of asking everybody is about the Jesus they met and the ethnicity of the Jesus that they met. So when you came to the Christian faith, what was the skin color of Christ? And was that meaningful or not meaningful to you growing up? Was that talked about or just, it was just there growing up? I'd love to hear.
So it was not talked about, right? Not at first. Okay. So when you were saying that, I think a lot of folks, maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say everyone, we had a carpet or like a mural that had the Last Supper. You probably have seen something like that, right?
Totally.
So we had a gigantic carpet mural of that in our house and it hung really big and, seeing Jesus, in the middle, he was a white male. And I remember even thinking in churches, black churches I grew up in, my dad was a pastor, all of the paintings and pictures of Jesus, he was white. No one actually said Jesus is white, but that's what I saw. Right. And so, even in the Korean church I went to, the Full Gospel Korean church, the pictures and all that, Jesus was white. It wasn't spoken of his race, his ethnicity, his background, any of those things. It wasn't until I'm thinking into my high school, maybe even college, that I heard someone literally say Jesus was a Jew. And I remember wanting to fall off of my chair and go, what? And I know that sounds so crazy.
Yeah.
Those who are listening, like, duh, Tosh, didn't you go through who begat?
There wasn't John Smith in there, was there? Like, nope.
Now that I think about it, and so through all the begets, you didn't put that all together. I because that's what I saw, right? Which goes to show us like what we see, right? As far as representation, sometimes it overshadows and overpowers anything else we might read or whatever. The truth, that part too, right? So then when I heard that I feel like that kind of put a crack, which was good, into what I was feeling, right? And knew. And it was like, now thinking back, seeing Jesus in those pictures and portrayed as a white male, it felt like the white race had a monopoly on Jesus. And that how could he understand the plight of a brown skin, black skin folks? How could he understand that, right? And so then it wasn't, going back to your question, it wasn't talked about. And then it was just not until my 30s and 40s and, reading books like yours, as well as Michelle Aimee Reyes and thinking, it wasn't until probably like the last 6-7 years that I finally was like, okay, who was Jesus? His lineage, Where did he, what were the ethnicities of his parents? What his culture, all of those things that were just not talked about within the church. And I don't think it's because people didn't want to talk. Well, the church I grew up in, I'm thinking it's not because they didn't want to talk about it necessarily. There probably are places where people do not want to, but it was just not a knowledge of that. It's almost that whole knowledge that's passed on. And we just believe that that's what it is, instead of really doing and digging in the research and seeing. And I think also admitting that it's not what it was requires us to shift and change. It requires us to let go of some things, and then it requires us to take on some things traditionally. And sometimes folks are not ready for that. And so it's like, we're just going to keep believing what we're believing and then go from there. But yeah, it was not talked about. And it wasn't until I got older that I realized how much that impacted me, the lack of discussing it and what his cultural background was, which would have, if I had a chance to talk about it, it would have deepened my relationship with him. And the scriptures just wouldn't have been a scripture about like, he cares and he understands and he knows. It'd be like, okay, he does, because look at his background, look at where he came from, you know, all of those things. So
thanks for sharing. Hope you'll join us next week for part two of this interview. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.